gentlemen, welcome to episode 87 of season 11 of Move It Up Minute, the daily podcast where we curry our way through the 2001 award-winning HBO miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Joe Amade, the CEO of Virgil Films and a film buff. Welcome back to the show, Joe.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
Yes, it's always fun to have you on. I love our conversations, both on and off.
Me too. Me too.
Yes.
It's always good to see your face.
Yes.
And hear your voice.
Ditto, ditto, ditto. So episode 87 begins with the men returning to their foxholes and ends with Lip checking for a sign in the woods. So before,
yes, when I watched my first episode you asked me to do, I think it begins with Joe stepping in.
Yes, it does.
And I was wondering if this is done on purpose or you picked this episode just because it was me or what?
No, first of all, it was completely random that you got this. This is not what the Weinsteins did to, what's his name?
Everybody.
No, but they did. No, but there's a famous story, and I've told it before here, that in Shakespeare in Love, during the credits, Edward Zwick, right?
Edward Zwick.
They put Edward Zwick's name on screen as they're showing a pilot.
Yeah. Zwick and Harvey didn't get along too well.
Correct. So that was done on purpose. This was not.
you know, Zwick wrote a really good book. Forgive me, I'm not going to remember the name of it, but about his days making movies, and he has some nice words to say about Harvey. You know, all of us that are in the industry have our own Harvey stories. I knew Harvey quite well, but we all have good and bad stories about Harvey.
Right. Exactly. And there's always the idea of having to separate, the art from the artist.
That is true. Harvey could pick good movies.
Yes.
But he had, that's the good about Harvey.
Exactly. We'll leave it at that.
We'll leave it at that.
Yeah. So yes, Joe, this was not done on purpose. The reason that you got this is you told me this is the time of year that you can record, and randomly this was the week that you got. So apparently you chose beforehand that you wanted to step in a part.
But I will also tell you that, this episode is considered the best episode of the show.
You're talking about part 7.
A lot of people.
You're talking about part 7, or are you talking about 7. The 5 minutes that we're talking about?
I'm talking about 7. 7 as a whole. 7 as a whole is considered by, a lot of people online anyway as the penultimate episode of Band of Brothers. Hardest to watch for a lot of reasons I can't get into, because some of them are things that happen in the future episodes, but really good, really great, as a matter of fact. When I started doing a little bit of research just to remind myself of what happens during this episode, a lot of people say this is the one, this is the episode that turned a really, really good series into a great series.
Okay. See, my problem is I love all 10 parts of this, so it's hard for me to say which one is better than the others.
Yeah.
Also because through my research, I've gotten very deep into all of them also. Obviously there are scenes that are more powerful than other scenes, but that doesn't mean that it's necessarily a better one or a sure. lesser one. But I love all 10 parts equally, and as hard as I try to say, okay, which one I like the best, I so far haven't been able to come up with an answer to that.
Well, maybe, it's interesting because
When I get to the end of the 10th, I'll be able to pinpoint one and say, wow, this one was the most interesting to talk about. I don't know.
Well, you're also, you're revisiting this series 5 minute by 5 minute. I mean, you're looking at this so closely, almost every single minute. No, not almost. You're looking at this every single minute, and yes. You're investing the time, as opposed to some of us that are guests, I mean, I did not have the time to go back and watch the entire series. I watched this episode, and then did my research on this episode. But it makes me now, I will go back and watch the entire series again, because of, what I saw over the past, week or two researching this episode.
Perfect. That's great. And what you can do is you can go back to the beginning of my podcast and listen as, things happen also.
I do that. No, I do listen. It beats taking sleeping pills. But anyway, no,
It works, hey Joe, if it works putting you to sleep, that's great.
no, I do. I do listen. I do listen. I don't listen to every single one. I mean, we have other friends that have podcasts. I got to fit them in. But podcasts are interesting because you either really latch on and listen to all of them or most of them, or I just delete them after three or four listens. And there's just
Okay,
too
understandable.
many. Not yours. I'm not talking about yours, but in particular movie podcasts. There's and I've listened to a lot of them, and most of them, no, I don't keep around.
Okay, that is completely fair.
I don't
So
need to hear a 22-year-old tell me what, that, a Will Ferrell movie is the best movie ever made. Nothing against Will Ferrell, but I'm sorry.
well, it depends on which Will Ferrell movie.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So
No.
anyway,
That's a
Joe
good point.
steps in shit. Thank you.
You're very welcome. So, Joe, what is your history with Band of Brothers?
I, like everybody else, just watched it on HBO. I remember the hype leading up to it. If I can remember, was this Hanks and Goetzman's or Gary's first series?
No, they did From the Earth to the Moon before this.
So this was their first really good series.
That's harsh.
From Earth to the
That's
Moon.
harsh. That's harsh.
Yeah, From Earth to the Moon was good. It was good, but it wasn't this. But this,
Wasn't
I
this,
and I guess
but it's very different. It's also a completely different audience. The people who are going to go
totally
on
different audience.
and watch 12 episodes about the Apollo missions, and someone who's going to want to watch about a group of soldiers, a company of soldiers during World War II are not the same people. I mean, I'm a fan of both. I love From the Earth to the Moon also.
Yeah, I didn't. I liked it, but I didn't. I wouldn't watch it again.
Okay, I've seen it numerous times,
Yeah.
and I would.
Yeah.
I would even contemplate doing it 5 minutes by 5 minutes, but I probably will not. Because I know someone else who is more of a space aficionaire who has been trying to do it for a few years, and he actually knows astronauts. I don't.
Oh, okay.
So good luck to you, Jim. I hope you do it because I'd love to listen.
Yeah, but like I said, with the rest of the country, we all eagerly awaited this. This is back during a time when HBO was the king of really great programming. It was of a time when you did not have all of the other options filled with programming that you have today. And so it was also at a time when these episodes premiered on Sunday night. So, the cliche Monday morning water cooler talk was, did you watch Band of Brothers? And so people talked about the episodes,
Correct.
because you couldn't binge them. It was different. It was a different time. So yeah, this thing caught on pretty darn quick.
Yes, it really did.
Yeah. Yeah,
Especially
it
since
really did.
it happened during 9/11, more or less. So,
Yeah.
that's already part of the history here, that 9/11 made this series much more powerful, because people could understand it a little more about why these guys went to go fight.
Yeah, and these guys were all, this Greatest Generation was always admired, but not understood as much as they are today. We all know what they went through, but again, in most cases, the war was depicted by older Hollywood films that were great, really good, but they didn't obviously they weren't as realistic when it came to battle action than this was, or Saving Private Ryan,
correct,
and films that have come out since then. So, you know, we didn't, we knew people were hurt, we knew people were killed, we knew people were maimed, but that wasn't depicted in the older films like it is in Band of Brothers.
Very, very true. Very true. Because again, that also had a lot to do with the way they made films in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, you know, which was very different. I mean, I could even mention a few World War II movies that most of my guests have no idea what they are, but you probably do. I'm assuming you've heard of Battleground.
Yeah, I've heard of Battleground.
Exactly. Have you seen Attack?
I've seen Attack, Jack Palance.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, to me, those are amazing World War II movies that were made. You know, both those were made. Well, Battleground was in 1949, and Attack, I think, was 53.
In the 50s.
It was in the 50s. I think it was 53. Or maybe it was 56. Okay, it's one of those. But again, the themes that they dealt with in those two movies are themes you don't see in very many movies. In that time period.
Yeah.
You know, and
no, you don't. I mean, every once in a while they would make a film. There was a film called Bright Victory.
Mm-hmm.
Bright
Yes.
Victory with
Oh, I love that. That was great.
It's a great film. And no one's ever heard of that film. And that was probably one of the first films that dealt with racism in some way that, when I was a kid, it was like, wow. And I don't want to get into the storyline that much, but yeah, I remember Bright Victory, and obviously the John Garfield film where he goes blind.
Correct.
Again, about a soldier from Philadelphia, Pride of the Marines.
Part of the Marines, yeah.
About another soldier from Philadelphia.
Correct.
So yeah, so they dealt with, but again, those films were more about psychological problems. Again, the depiction of people getting shot and people getting killed. There's a lot different in Band of Brothers, or during that time, than, films that I grew up with.
Right. Obviously. That's completely understandable. You know, I mean, even if we want to talk about The Great Escape, I mean, The Great Escape, you know, theoretically depicts a place that's supposed to have very harsh, supposed to be a harsh environment, but the way that The Great Escape was presented was more in a feel good type of way.
Yes.
You know, even when they, even though they kill 76 of them, you know, there's still
50. They execute 50. 76 escape.
Sorry. You're right.
That's all right.
They kill 50.
That's all right. I kind of enjoyed that, but no. But even that, when they execute the 50, when they execute the 51, it's totally made up about how they execute the 50.
Of course, of course.
Because they didn't do that.
Yeah.
But it was off camera. It's off camera. And, you know, you're right. Done in a very delicate, delicate way, you know. So the violence wasn't there that is in this film. But I enjoyed these first 5 minutes. Kind of brought me back to watching, it immediately brought me back to how much I enjoyed Band of Brothers, and very quickly started to bring back some of the characters that I liked the most, in particular Buck. But yeah, it's
okay. We'll talk a lot about Buck.
Yeah, okay.
Over the next few days, so we won't get into that yet. Okay. But let's wait. Okay, so we basically ended things yesterday with the guys, being moved back into the forest, and today we find out that they're actually going back into their old foxholes that the 1st Battalion was there for a little bit of a while. So, they get back into their foxholes, and Joe Tilly starts it off by saying, "Oh, you got to be kidding me. Someone's going to die. Someone's going to fucking die." He goes, "Garnier, look at this shit. One of those 1st Battalion took a dump in my foxhole."
Yeah.
And Garnier looks at him and goes, "I think they in everyone's foxholes, Joe." Yeah. Because I don't think they want to spend much time above ground.
Yeah.
And which just that line itself tells us so much about what these men and other men that were, that were in foxholes were dealing with at the time. You know, if you're in an area and you're so scared that you're willing to shit in your own foxhole where it's going to smell, but you're not, you don't want to get out.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Yeah, it's a foreboding. It's almost like the foxhole is going to save your life, or could save your life. And if things start to happen, or when things start to happen, you got to be prepared, and you got to be in the foxhole. You know, you got to make sure your foxhole is dug, and make sure it's, you know, it's, you know, dug enough that it will do its job. And so for me, you know, they're all out trying to make sure that their foxholes are okay. I guess they're looking across at the Germans. They know something's coming, or they feel that something's coming, and they want to be prepared.
Right. Yeah. And again, this is a nice way of depicting it by just showing how scared the other guys were. You know, that's all it comes down to.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds as if they're making a joke here, but what they're actually doing in is to show us how bad this situation really is going to get.
Yeah, and it's also showing that they are, you know, I guess their attitude, their demeanor is, you know, they're not shriveling up and crying and, oh my God, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? Instead, they're joking. They're making it's you know, they're making the best of the situation. And I know that's not, you know, that's probably the easiest way to describe what they're doing. But their fear, even though you know it's there, they're dealing with it by joking, you know, but at the same time, they're being serious as well.
Correct. Correct.
Which means the writing is really, really good.
Yeah, that goes without saying. I mean, the writing in Band of Brothers is spectacular. Yeah. I'm still shocked that it didn't win the Emmy and that it lost to what was that? It was about I'm pretty sure it was about Stalin, Churchill and Roosevelt.
Okay.
I remember the name of the miniseries. When Lions Roared or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, there was something called something like
that. It was something like that. And,
not Windsor.
You know,
War.
I. No, it was not the Windsor War. Windsor War was in 1980. It was in 80. Windsor War was 85.
Yeah. I don't remember those dates. I'm not a date guy.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah. I was really, really shocked. I mean, I as everyone here already knows, I spoke with Bruce McKenna, who was the writer of Part 6 and Part 4, and you know he said it was they were obviously very upset that they didn't win the Oscar that year, the Emmy, sorry, Emmy, but the Gathering Storm, that was the name of the other one.
Right.
Sorry. Yeah, again, I don't understand why the Gathering Storm. I've seen both. So
well, again, you know, you did bring up Harvey Weinstein, and we didn't get into Shakespeare in Love winning the Academy Award for Best Picture, but we won't go there.
Right. Exactly. Oh,
it happens.
It
happens.
But are you saying that in the Emmys, there's as much jockeying as there is in the Oscars, or more so?
I think there's more so in the Emmys. The Emmys are, you know, just about a joke these days here in the United States. You know, again, when you have...
Okay.
You know, the Emmys enables people like, and I love her. I've met her. She's a great actress. But, you know, Jean Smart, you know, it's like a given she's going to win the Emmy every year, you know, and there's just things that could be and should be changed. And the Emmy, I mean, again, you can sit back now and you could start looking at shows that have never gotten any award, any nominations. I mean, where are the nominations for any of the Taylor Sheridan product that's out there? You know, the 1823s or the, I mean, these are, you know, legendary shows but again, the same people get nominated. It's all the time. And it's just studio driven or network driven. So anyway.
Right. Okay. Fair enough.
So yeah, so they're building holes.
Right. So, you know, these guys basically are just trying to figure out, you know, what they're supposed to do at this point.
Yes.
You know, they're not really too happy about it, but it is what it is.
And I have my notes here. Yeah, and they're still dealing with Dyke.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course. Which doesn't help.
Which doesn't help. And is also controversial when you start reading into notes and other people's depiction of that disagree with the depiction of him in this series.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's been brought up before.
We've mentioned it a little bit, but you know, feel free.
I just read. I mean, he's not portrayed. He's almost portrayed as a coward in the show, from what I've seen in this 5 minutes or 15 minutes that I watched. But in reading into him, he was he won the bronze medal a couple times. He had a pretty spectacular career in the service, and a lot of people feel that the series, in particular his family, felt this way, did a serious disservice to him.
Okay, because I mean but you know, he still was known as Foxhole Norman, yeah. Regardless.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So they're building, and then all of a sudden, things start to happen.
Exactly. And so, you know, these guys are just trying to figure out how to use their foxholes properly.
Yeah, and then they find out.
Exactly. And at this point, I mean, one of the things I like about this particular part is how it's narrated by Lipton. Lipton, you know, Donnie Wahlberg gives us so much information as to what's going on.
Yes.
You know, here, I mean, right now, after, you know, they talk about this in the foxholes, so there's a great crane shot where the camera is just pulling out, pulling up and away from them. And we see the guys just walking around, you know, this little area where they are. And then we get Lipton's narration. While we were in the Boisjacks, the Germans had been shelling our old position. There were signs of tree bursts everywhere. That got our attention. And then, you know, an officer says, light and noise, discipline, we're getting close. And then we continue with Lipton's narration. He goes, looking across the field at Foy, I could see enemy troops. Still couldn't see their artillery, but I knew it was down there. And then we see Lipton talking to some of the other officers and goes, well, it looks like the Krauts have been pounding this area with pretty big stuff, 88s. I'd say they got this whole stretch of the line targeted. And then one of the officers, I think it's Shames, goes, well, they're not chilling now. Maybe they've got a new target. No, they're just waiting. For what? And then Buck jumps in and goes, for us to reoccupy the position. And then Shames says, well, maybe fall back to a different location. Dig in. Nope. It's our job to hold the line here. We got pretty good foxholes. We just need to fortify the covers. If they've got us targeted, maybe, then Buck goes, we hold the line here. Sergeant Lipton's right. We're going to strengthen our covers, and we're going to hang in. We're not going to fall back. Right, Lieutenant? And we see Dyke in the background. You know, it looks like he's dreaming. And he goes, He goes, right, Lieutenant? He goes, fine. You all take care of it. I got to go talk to regiment. You know, he looks at his watch and says, I got to go talk to regiment. He's getting ready to leave. And then Lipton says, well, we better get moving. Yeah. And, you know, we see the guys trying to refortify their foxholes. And Lipton brings some trees, branches to Garnier. And he goes, here you go, Bill. Hey, thanks, Lip. He goes, you got it. I'll get you some more branches. I'd appreciate that. He goes, yeah. And then, you know, we see that Lipton's and a few other guys are trying to chop down some branches from the trees to use for cover. And then they hear an explosion. And then incoming, take cover. And then Lipton goes, take cover, come on, find some cover. They got us zeroed. Find some cover, find a foxhole. Come on, take cover, come on, find some cover. And then Lipton jumps into one of the foxholes and, you know, or one of the guys jumps into a foxhole and we see that a tree collapses on him. And, you know, we hear, take cover. And then Toy is also taken by shock, and he goes, "Ah, shit!" And then there's like a lot of explosions. I mean, they definitely didn't skimp on the pyrotechnics.
No, they did not. And you're seeing trees getting blown up. You're seeing, you know, when they talked previously about how the trees were cut, you're seeing this happen all over the place. And you know, it's everything that they didn't want to see happening, but it's everything that they were preparing themselves for. But I had in this episode, I had the feeling that they weren't there yet. They weren't exactly finished what they were trying to do when these bombs started dropping.
Nope, not at all. Well, which again makes sense. That why would the Germans wait until they're
exactly,
ready?
Exactly. Because you know they were watching the Germans, but the Germans are watching them too.
Exactly. And then Lipton goes, "Come on, find some cover, find some cover." And then we're back to the narration, and we hear Lipton say, "For some reason, at that moment, in the half-finished foxhole, all I could think about was the 4th of July when I was a kid. I loved to make my own firecrackers, cherry bombs, ladyfingers. I loved to blow up dirt clods and pop bottles and the like. Look forward to it all year round. What I saw that day was the most awesome and terrifying display of firepower."
Yeah.
I'd ever seen in my life. And, you know, again, the pyrotechnics are just unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, did you know that this was all filmed on a soundstage?
I think I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, again, that's just amazing.
They can make it look so real.
Exactly. And again, doing it indoors.
Yeah.
You know, they're not even doing it. They're not doing it like in a real forest where they're. You know.
And probably doing it over and over again at times.
Exactly. And then he continues with the narration and goes, "Of course, I wouldn't have been laughing if I'd known what happened to Joe Tully."
Exactly. Yeah.
And then we see a shot of Joe on the ground. We see he's injured. And, you know, then we get a shot of his leg, and we see that his leg has been severed along the way. And then Malarkey's in his foxhole and goes, "Maybe we should see if anyone's hit." And then Garnier goes, "Yeah, Malark, that's what they want. The craps are trying to draw us out into the open." So, you know, the idea here is that, you know, these guys are not stupid. They know that. You know, it's very dangerous to go out, even if someone's injured.
Yeah.
You know, and we've seen that in a lot of war movies. They show that, you know, where there's a guy who's injured and someone else goes over to go help him, and they also get injured.
Yeah,
you know,
it's kind of a given. I mean, and you see it a lot in fictional movies, but this one you kind of know this is what happened.
Right.
And you know, you don't know what's coming down the road, but you know whatever, you know. Whatever is going to happen in the next 5 minutes or 10 minutes or 15 minutes, it's all true. This is not a fictional story. These are real people.
That's right.
Heartbreaking exactly. 5 minutes.
So
heartbreaking.
Completely. Now he mentions firecrackers.
Yeah.
So do you know how many states? How many of the 50 U.S. states have you know, where it's legal to use fireworks?
No, I don't know that number. I do know that wherever it is illegal, in most cases, a lot of people are still getting away with it.
That goes with so many.
Yeah, but law-wise, I don't know. How many?
Right.
You probably looked it up.
49. There are 49 out of the 50 states that on some degree allow fireworks or firecrackers.
What would be the one that doesn't?
Let's see if you can guess. Any idea what state would probably have it completely?
Probably like Hawaii.
No, that, actually, it's not. It's also on the East Coast. It's one of the New England states.
Oh, and not Maine, probably Rhode Island.
Massachusetts. There is a total ban there.
Wow.
You know, some places like in California, Delaware, Minnesota, and New York, they have it's very restricted.
Yeah.
But there are 29 states that it's broadly legal. I mean, I don't know why I understand. Actually, now I know why, because I remember when I was in the States almost 4 years ago. So I drove from New York into Pennsylvania, and I remember right at the
the border.
Town, right at the town that I went into, you know, they had tons of signs about fireworks. Because yeah. in New York, apparently, it's you know, much more difficult to get legal fireworks. So you just go across state lines to Pennsylvania. You can get what you want. And
well, there's a fireworks store. Well, it might have even been the one that you drove by when you entered Pennsylvania that has been in the news a lot. Unfortunately, two local kids. From the high school that I went to, one's from the high school I went to, and one's from another high school down the road, went up to New York and threw bombs, made bombs, and tried to throw bombs into a crowd in front of the mayor's house.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's not a smart idea.
No. And they got caught, and they were... anti-Israel, Jewish. These kids living in our own neighborhood. I mean, living 10 minutes from our house, going to the same high school that my granddaughter goes to. And they bought pieces of the bombs, the fuses, at the local fireworks store.
Oh, wow.
That's yeah. 5 minutes, 10 minutes from my house. Yeah. Wow.
That's amazing yeah. and scary at the same time.
Amazing and scary at the same time. Yeah. So
now he also mentions Ladyfingers. I had never heard of Ladyfinger firecrackers before. Had you ever heard of them? Do you know?
No, but I probably know what they are, you know, because I remember as a kid we used to get all kinds of different, you know, whether it be a firecracker or the things that, you know, that lit up and then disintegrated looking like a snake. But I don't know what lady, I don't know the name of that. No.
Okay, so they're usually small, cylindrical, and longer and thinner than other fireworks, and they're used to produce a sudden sharp pop or crack sound. You know, they're considered low hazard fireworks, but they know how to make sounds. You know.
Yeah, we all messed around with firecrackers. Remember, we all have stories about the firecracker going off in our hand, but not blowing our hand off. But man, exactly. I'll tell you what, it hurt. It stung.
Understandable. Understandable. And I mean, Lipton's from West Virginia, so
okay.
Yeah, it seems to me that West Virginia is a place where they would use a lot of fireworks, you know, on 4th of July and everything like that. So it makes sense.
And there's a lot of forest in West Virginia. There's a lot of trees, a lot of mountainous trees and stuff. So,
okay.
But yeah. Very good episode. Or a good 5 minutes.
Yeah, definitely. So, you have anything else you want to say about these 5 minutes?
No, it's just, like I said, it watching these 5 minutes immediately brought me back to when I watched the show originally and made me want to, you know, go back and revisit the show. Because I remember how good it was.
All right. Okay. Fair enough. All right. So today's segment is Band Brand, where my guest will give their top five fictional movie bands. So, Joe, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Number five is going to be the band that was in Sing Street, the John Carney film.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, again, staying with the John Carney film. This is an unnamed band because they never named the band. But Carney made another music film called Begin Again with Mark Ruffalo and Keira Knightley. And they formed a band and it's got a great soundtrack, a lot of great songs.
Yeah, I like the music there. Yes.
Yeah. Number three would be The Commitments.
Okay.
And number two and one, kind of a cheating thing here, is Eddie and the Cruisers One and Eddie and the Cruisers Two.
which is which?
Eddie and the Cruisers is number one. Only because the music, and all the music's by John Cafferty and the Beaver Brown Band, but it's Springsteen music. It sounds just like Bruce's songs.
Yeah.
And I'm a big Springsteen fan, and that's the music's much better in that movie than the actual movie. But
I was going to say that. I mean, I have fond memories of watching that movie numerous times, as a kid.
yeah.
When I revisited it, I was like, okay, the movie itself is okay,
Yeah.
but the music is even better.
Yeah, the music is even better. That was a hard one though, because a lot of the when I really think back, and then when I went on, when I went on to the internet to try to search, it was Josie and the Pussycats, and a lot of animated stuff, fictional bands, and maybe the band that was in Almost Famous, but I don't even remember their name.
Stillwater.
Stillwater. Okay, yeah. So yeah, that's my list.
Okay. I'm actually shocked that you don't have the Blues Brothers on your list.
Yeah, I thought about it, but it's, I actually thought about the Blues Brothers, and I said, yeah, probably everybody else in the world picked that, so I'm not going to.
Okay. Okay. That is a fair decision to do it that way. All right. Excellent. So now we will play the daily game of Name That World War II Movie.
Okay.
I will randomly spin the wheel, and we're going to see what movie Joe gets, and let's see if it's something that he's seen. And
Spin that wheel.
around and around and around the wheel goes. Okay. This is definitely a movie that I know you've seen, but we will have to see how I'm going to explain it to you. Okay, this is a movie from 1981 starring Donald Sutherland and Kate Nelligan, and it's about a German spy who's stuck in England
Oh,
and is trying to get out because
awful.
he has important information about D-Day.
Yeah, I know the bad. He's the bad guy. Oh God, what's his Eye of the Needle?
Very good. Very good. Excellent. Nicely done. Nicely done.
Thank you.
All right. So, Joe, would you like to tell everyone where they can get in touch with Joe Amade?
You can get me at my email is Joe at virgilfilmsent.com, or you can go to virgilfilms.com and all the information is there as well.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rap Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movierupminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierupminute@movierup.net. So, until tomorrow, Kareem!
Kareem!